Okay, so for the next 3 weeks and possibly another mini-series after that, we'll see, Reza Chiner and I are going to be discussing the methodology of the Psak of the Chief Rabbis of Israel. Oh, before I forget, also, so that's the next 3 Mondays, and then we'll see what happens after that, because we hit Shavuos then. But on Sunday, for anyone who wants, I'll be giving the Rabbi Price Memorial Lecture at Shari Shamayim at 6, I think, is when we start with Mincha. Okay, but to our topic. So this year we've been devoting many of our shiurim to what we've been calling Celebrating 70. So this series is part of that general goal. So the reason I'm starting with the halachic methodology of Rav Avadya Yosef is not because he was the first chief rabbi, but because the... arguably the easiest chief rabbi to speak about a coherent methodology, not because the others weren't systematic thinkers, but because Rabbi Benny Lau did his doctorate on the methodology of Ravadia's methodology of Psak. And Rabbi Turchiner asked me, he said, well, how can you just rely on Benny Lau, which I did about 90% of it, and I said, well, because he reviewed it with Rav Avadya Yosef, and there's Askama from Rav Avadya at the beginning that says this is right. So so that makes it much easier because someone has done the hard work here. Excellent book. Excellent book. I love Rav Avadya. I remember his Levaya, which was a Chavaya. It was... they don't know the exact number, but it was somewhere between 800,000 and a million people at the Levaya. All of Yerushalayim was packed from the Shar Ha'ir. It was crazy. I made it to the Kever. I made it to the Aron. It helps to be short. I made it all the way in to the Aron. So Rav Avadya Yosef. Rav Avadya Yosef, I gave you brief biography here, was born in Baghdad in 1920, immigrated to Israel at age 4, studied in very prominent yeshivot in the old city of Yerushalayim. He was ordained by former chief rabbi Rav Benzion Uziel, the first Sephardic chief rabbi. In 1947, he became chief rabbi and head of the rabbinic court of Cairo. During that period, he basically memorized the library in the Cairo, in Cairo. So even after it burned down, they were all stored in his head. 1950, he returned to Israel, served as the rabbi of Tel Aviv, later as the Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel, 1973 to 1983. And he died in 2013. So Rav Avadya Yosef is perhaps, almost definitely, the most influential Sephardi posek. Definitely the last 50 years, probably of the last 100 years. His personality is still extremely influential in the Sephardi community. So what I want to do is try to understand who was he as a posek. So, what do you know about him? Before I go into the depths of it, what do you know about his psak? What have you heard about his psak? Haley. What have you heard about Rav Avadya's psak? What typifies it? Or if you've read his tshuvot, what typifies his psak?
Lachzir atara liyoshna.
Oh, good. We'll get to that. Lachzir atara liyoshna. It's the first thing on top.
Versus,
good.
Versus Yosef.
Good. Perfect. So, number one. Number one. Rav Avadya's life goal was what he called Lachzir atara liyoshna, to return the crown to as it once was, to his yore. Right. Now, what did he mean? So, what number one goal of Rav Avadya Yosef's psak, as he would put it, is to bring the entire Sephardi community under the authority of the Beit Yosef, right? Of Maran HaBeit Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, who he loves more than anybody in the universe. I should have started with this, but we skipped to 6 just to see how much he loves him. He starts, Hine yadua shebechol dine isur veheter kibalnu aleinu hachrat maran ha-shulchan aruch rabbeinu ha-gadol ma'arenu harav Rabbi Yosef Karo. It is known that in all things, all matters of ritual, we have accepted the rulings of our master, Rabbi Yosef Karo, Asher Melech Malchei Hamlachim Chafetz Bikaro, which the King of Kings loves him. Now, where does he get that quote, by the way, from? So you would think that. He actually doesn't. He actually gets it from the Beis Yosef's description of himself. In the beginning of the Magen Meisharim, the Rabbi Yosef Karo, one of his strangest work, arguably, is the Magen Meisharim, which is the record of his Chavrusa with the angel. And in that Hakdama, he says that the angel told him that you, Yosef HaMechuna Karo, Asher Melech Malchei HaMelechim Chavetz Bikaro. Now obviously the quote is from the Megillah, but he's actually quoting the Beis Yosef's description of himself. So his goal in life is to bring all Svaradim under the authority of the Beit Yosef. And as Eli correctly notes, what he's fighting against is a tradition in much of Eidut HaMizrach to Paskin like the primarily the Ben Ishchai, also the Chida a bit, but primarily the Ben Ishchai. Let's analyze what exactly this means. So, first question, halachically, why should it be true that any community should be bound by any specific posek? Where does the notion come from that an entire community should be under the authority of a posek? Mara d'atra, the notion, literally, Mara, the master of d'atra, of the place. So that is in number one. The Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Im lo hevi kli me'erev Shabbos mevi'u b'Shabbos migu'leh, v'sakana mechaseu al pi edim. So the Gemara is talking about Mila. And the halacha is that Rabbi Eliezer rules that you are allowed to even violate malachot. Everyone agrees that if a bris milah bismano on time falls on Shabbos, you're allowed to violate Shabbos to perform the milah. Rabbi Eliezer holds it's not only true of the bris itself, it's true of any preparatory acts for the bris. It's a minority position, but this is his position. And if you skip a line, the majority position is that of Rabbi Akiva. Klal Omri Rabbi Akiva, kol malacha she'efshar la'asosa me'erev Shabbos, any work, any malacha that could have been done theoretically on Friday, ena dochaz Shabbos, v'shiyef shal lasos and Shabbos dochaz Shabbos. Anything that could have been done before, anything preparatory, does not override Shabbos. And that's how we paskin. Despite the fact that that's how we paskin, the Gemara celebrates the fact that in the city where Rabbi Eliezer lived, they would do what, according to everybody else, was a violation of Shabbos, meaning they would do the preparatory act for the meal on Shabbos. Tanu Rabbanan, bimkomo she Rabbi Eliezer, ayikarsin eitzim lasos pecham and lasos barzel b'Shabbos. In the place of Rabbi Eliezer, they would cut down wood to forge the metal that they needed for the bris on Shabbos. And then the Gemara says, similarly, Rabbi Yossi Aglili ruled that you were allowed to have chicken with milk. And Bimkomo Shabiosi Aglili, even though this was a minority position in the source over here, where Rabiosi Aglili lived, Ayochlin Basar, Ofechalav, they would eat chicken with milk. And then the Gemara goes on and explains how this came about. But the Gemara celebrates this. And the Gemara seems to have this notion called Mara de Asra, that every locale has their posek, and they have the right, or perhaps the responsibility, the obligation to follow him, lekula ulechomra. And that's something we celebrate, the Ritva. This is, like I said, 90% of this year is from Benny Lau's analysis. This Ritva, he never quotes, but to the best of my knowledge, but it's an important Ritva to understand this. So yeah, the Ritva, unique amongst the Rishonim, claims that what is the basis for this authority? Lotasur. Right, the pasuk says, "Lo tasurim and adavar sheyigidu l'chayaminu small," which in context refers to the authority of the Sanhedrin Agadol Yoshev Yerushalayim. But the Ritva extends it; it doesn't just mean the Supreme Court. "Lo tasur" means even your rabbi. "Bimkomo ayosin kamosu l'chayim." "Lo tasurim and adavar sheyigidu l'chayaminu small." "Afilu sheomer l'chayamin shu small v'kibu aschar al zeh." And as quoting Rashi's quote of this Sifre, right? Even if he tells you right is left, you do it and you'll be rewarded for it because that's your, not just right, it's your responsibility. If you get reward even when you're following a minority position, so for sure, when you're following a majority position, that your Rav holds. Okay, yeah.
No, actually, a curious thing. I went to another shir once. They were talking about the book of the Gospel of Talmud and the book of Proverbs. And they said, the rabbi said the book, one of the big differences
I don't remember if the Yerushalmi allows it or not. I have to look. But okay, that's a discussion. That's academics very much debate that one. Right. So in general, it's actually Ashkenazi traditions that have more rooted in Yerushalmi than Sephardi. But that's. That's a bit of a discussion for another. That's a discussion for another, a bigger discussion.
But I just want to know that because the case you were talking about writings, like I thought it's all based on the Book of Gomorrah.
Say it again.
I thought it was based on the Book of Gomorrah about drinking and together.
So I don't remember if the Yerushalmi Paskins like Rabbi Yossi Eglili, but that position is quoted in the Bavli. It's a minority position. I'd have to look it up. Okay. So this is the precedent, though, for listening to your local city authority. Except, where does the notion come from? Right? How do we get from that to Svardim should listen to the Beis Yosef? There's two huge jumps that have to happen before we get there. One is...
Yes, to be the man of the whole...
Right, meaning... What are the jumps, right? One is the place... The atra has just grown, right? The atar has grown. The place has grown. And B, the mara can be dead, right? It's a theoretical mara over a theoretical atra, or even worse, not just an atar, but in modern times, we go from atar to eda, right? We go from atar to eda. We go from a geographic location to an ethnic identity, right? So those are 2.5 massive leaps that have to happen. So where do those leaps come from? So leap number one, namely, that the mara, the posek, can be dead. It doesn't have to be your actual rav, is from the Rashba in number 3. The Rashba says, "Umin haderech hazeh," based on an expansion of this principle of mara d'atra, "kol shenagu lasut kol ma'aseim al pi echad m'gdolei haposekim b'makom shenagu lasut kol ma'aseim al pi echad z'rav alfasi z'chon l'bracha." This is the basis that there are places that follow the riff. And people who only follow the Rambam, very also elak dolim kirabam. Those places made these gidolim like their rabbi, their teacher. We haven't yet gotten to the notion that we've expanded the makom. We've just expanded the mara, right? We've expanded the rav. The rav can be dead, right? You don't need an actual rabbi. You can accept someone as your authority. But that's where we start. He notes that it's not actually mara d'asra. When he writes, umiyum yesham echad chacham v'ra'uy lahora'ah. But if there is somebody who is a posek, he's the actual mara d'atra, v'ro'a ra'ya la'asor, mashu'e matirin, no'ik bo iser. And he decides to forbid something that is permitted based on the Rambam, the Rif, whatever it might be, he's allowed to. She'ene l'kirabam mamash. This is not actually their mara d'atra, it's not actually their shul rabbi. The makom rabbam ilu yasur shalok v'arav yekilu b'chod rabbam b'mkomo. If it's a live, living authority and you in front of him violate his psak, that is disrespectful. But this rabbi is only theoretical, right? He died hundreds of years ago. You've accepted him as if. Kitarba deitra deretz Yisrael shkulam no go heter, then gives a bunch of examples. Okay, and then he goes on to some exceptions. But the Rashba, even though he qualifies this notion, claims that it is at least theoretically possible to accept as your mara d'atra a past authority and then be bound by it. That's expansion one. Expansion two is then to not just expand the notion of mara, which rabbi can be that authority, but two is who can be under the auspices of said authority. So that, you see, I gave you the chida, in number 4, says, vida, and again, everything here is going to, okay, I'm going to say this once, and then I'm not going to get back to it. What I'm not doing today is figuring out whether what Rabbi Ovadia did is convincing such that other authorities would follow his shita, right? What I'm doing is outlining his position, right? Each one of these things is in question. Right? I mean, whether it's actually possible to do this, whether this ever happened, if it did happen, is it still binding now that we no longer live in geographic areas like Sfarad? Those are very complicated topics. I have been doing this with my Shir B'Ivrit at the Bayit for the last like 2 months. You're free to go online and look at my last like 10 Hebrew Shirim, where I talk about whether Minhag Eidah makes sense in a world where we have left our original places or not. I analyze there many different shitot on the topic. You can look there. So I'm not going to try to figure out whether this is right. I'm just going to try to outline this position. Rav Ovadia, following a certain Svardi tradition, believes that not only have we done this, but right, the Rajba had spoken about individual cities or countries who accepted the Rambam. At some point, this expanded to Svardim, quote-unquote, which jumped not just to huge geographic swaths of land, but also to identity, right? Because it's Svardim living in Canada, Svardim living in Israel, right? Okay. But that's, look at the Chidon 4. Vida, shegibalti mizikne Torah, sheshama mipekadosh, harav agadol, ir vekadish, marein Rav Chaim Abulaf Yazal. I heard from the Holy One, from holy people, telling me from Chaim Abulaf Yazal, shekabala biyado, that he has a tradition. Sha'al klal maran bipsak halacha lelechet acharei shlosha amudei bit Yisrael. That there's a tradition, you have to follow Maran, you have to follow Rabbi Yosef Karo, because he followed the three pillars of Psak, Harif, Rambam, Varash. Right, the Rif, Rambam, and Rash. And there was a formal acceptance of 200 rabbis in the generation of Chaim Abulafia. And therefore, what he used to say, the pearl of, that he used to say, was that anyone who follows Maran, who follows the Beit Yosef, is following the authority of 200 Rabbanim. And you find this in Ashkenaz as well. If you look at number 5 in the Urim Vitumim of Rav Yonos and Eibschitz, writing in Germany, he writes that the Ashkenazim did the same thing. If you have a halacha in Shulchan Aruch, v'mechaber v'ramai shmito, dada cholek, and if the Rama and the Mechaber leave it out, kabbalah biyadi v'gam re'iti midanin mumchin, the tradition that I've seen from judges, v'chein dan anid, and I do as well, u'ma b'bli li'town kimlei, and someone wants to pull up some minority position of kimlei. Kimlei is the principle in monetary law, that you're allowed to come into court and say, even though the majority follows position X, I was following Y, and therefore you can't force me to pay, because I'm otzi mechaveru alavaraya. I'm oversimplifying that, but fine. He says you can't say kimle against the Raman the Beit Yosef. Kidara chole kevan shaharava Beit Yosef v'ramash mozichono acharei hadelet ein lachushlo. Anything that isn't quoted by the Beit Yosef and the Rama, you can't worry about. V'kimu v'kiblu chachmei hador lishmor v'lasot kechol ha'omer b'matbea katzar shulchan aruch v'rama. And everyone is accepted to follow either the Mechaber for Svardim and the Rama for Ashkenazim. Uleda'ati, and I think ein safik ki akol b'chtav miyad Hashem yiskil al yadam, that, and this is from God, no matter what question you ask on Shulchan Aruch Rama, you can find an answer to it. And that is this position. And Rabbi Ovadia follows this, as I said in number 6. The Beit Yosef, God loves him, and therefore you have to follow him no matter what. And he writes in the second line of 6, Ukvar nitkabel harav Beit Yosef aleinu bimkomenu larav lalechet achar hora'otav. We always follow him, bein lahakel, bein lahachmir. In number 7, he tells you more. Hine yadua mashakatav achronim. You know what the achronim write. Shekol svaradi shose kedat rama. Any svaradi who follows the Rama, rachmona litzlan, tries to paskin like an Ashkenazi, neged horat maran sarich kapara. Right, he needs to be forgiven. He needs forgiveness. He needs atonement. Onayin berkei Yosef, umuvor gamkin b'shas, shechziku mod barot marad ha'atra, etc. Next line. V'lachein, Bivadai Barzod Halalu Shem Atra Da Rambam Maranzal. He said in Eretz Yisrael, which is the place of the Beit Yosef in the Rambam, Kavatayu Nakdinan Vein Lazuz Midvrehem Yaminu Smol. You can't argue, you can't sway from it. And his son, the current chief rabbi, Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, number 8, summarizes his position. Afilu Me'a Achronim Chokim Alav. I don't care if 100 poskim argue on the Beit Yosef. Ein hamore rashai lahatir lahachmir neged harat maran lahakel. Afil miyesh rabim cholkim amaran. You can't be lenient against Maran, even if he's in a minority. The ein lo et lein hok afilu chumra neged Maran. Hamakel botonyanu. More than that, you can't even be machmir. And I don't think I'm only saying this lechumra. I'm saying it lekula. You're not allowed to take on a chumra that the Beis Yosef doesn't believe in. Shekein piskei Maran shumara da'atrein v'kibalna horotav. Beit Yosef is the posik of Eretz Yisrael. Nikbeu ka'alacha l'Moshe mi-Sinai. This is halacha Moshe mi-Sinai. She'ein b'machloket klal. There is no dispute. V'hanote midvarav yamin u'smol ha'orez hu mizalzel b'chvod rabotav. And if you do, you sway from it left or right, you are degrading your teachers. Right? The Yosef family is very, very sold on this. Okay. Who does he mean this for? Does he mean this only for quote-unquote Sfardim? Or does he mean it for Ashkenazim too? Right? He's convinced. Sfardim for sure, but what about Ashkenazim? Because he's advanced two arguments here. One is that Sfardim have accepted the Beis Yosef, and the other is that Israel is the Beis Yosef Shul. So is this Ashkenazim as well? So here, it's not clear. It's not clear what he wanted. He gives different indications. If you look in 9, he says as follows. She'ela, ger tzedek shenitgayer be'eretz Yisrael kadat, a convert in Israel, u'motza'o me'artzot Ashkenaz, but he's theoretically from Ashkenaz. Ha'im yuchal itnahek b'chot Pesach, u'v'yeter ha'alachot k'minhag ha'sfaradim ve'edun ha'mizrach she'kiblu aleihem orat maran ha'shulchan aruch. Can he follow Sfardi Psak? Or is he allowed to follow Ashkenazi Psak? So he writes, in this case, Umeata, Hol Umaran Ashulchan Aruch, Umarad Ara Yisrael Vatre Demaru, since Israel is the private property of the Beit Yosef, Kol Toshve Eretz Yisrael Svivotea Kiblu Horotav L'chol Asher Yomar Ki Uzeh. And everyone in Israel and the surrounding areas have accepted the Beit Yosef, no matter what. Bein Lakel Bein Lachmir. Al Piv Yitzuv Al Piv Yavo. That's what you follow. L'fichach Nir'eh Sheger Tzedek Shenitgayer Be'eretz Yisrael. Every convert. Hareu Katan Shenolad Ba. It's like a child born in Israel. Va'alav linhog b'chol lichotav tidat maran ha'shulchan aruch bein la'akel bein la'achmir. And therefore he has to follow shulchan aruch. V'afal b'shavotav shel hager me'artzot ashkenazim. And even though theoretically he's a convert from Russia, barur ma'ot she'en lo lachshosh afil la'achmir k'divrei ha'rama v'gonei ashkenaz. He doesn't have to worry at all about the Ashkenazi minug. K'shem chokin ha'maran ha'shulchan aruch she'en hager me'yachez achravotav klal. Now here, some have tried to derive from this that he thinks even Ashkenazim really theoretically should be following the Beit Yosef.
He just didn't think they would listen to him.
What? Correct. Now this tshuva isn't really a proof, because this tshuva is talking about a convert who happens to come theoretically from Ashkenaz. But he's not an Ashkenazi in the way we talk about it. He's a convert from Russia, from Poland, who knows where. Right? So there, he says, look, it's neutral, so he might as well accept the Beit Yosef as long as he's in Israel. This doesn't prove that he really thinks every Ashkenazi should follow the Beit Yosef. And in other places, he makes it clear that, like it or not, he will accept Ashkenazim paskin like the Rama. That's what he writes in 10. Avol minhag hashanu b'machloket bein ha'edot. Any minhag, which is a dispute between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, v'chol eidakim minhagah. And each Eda follows its own minog, Nahara Nahara Upashte. Each river has gone its way. And we know that in many things we argue with the Ashkenazim. Right, so in certain Shuvot, he's clear that he's okay with Ashkenazim following the Rama. The only question is, he's okay with it because he knows he can't change it? Or anybody really, really thinks that the entire universe should just follow Maran and that should be the end of history? Or does he really, really think that it's only Svardim that have accepted the Beit Yosef? So this is a dispute amongst interpreters of Reb Uvadia, but but that's principle one of Reb Uvadia Yosef. Now what Ben Ilau points out is that this wasn't just a halachic position. It was a political position. Right? His belief that there has to be a pan-Svardi culture behind the Beit Yosef led to Shas. Right? Meaning this became a political movement. But as Eli noted before, it wasn't just the Ashkenazim who weren't thrilled with this. In fact, specifically Ashkenazim don't care so much.
It's the Iraqis.
It was the Iraqis. It was the Syrians. It was the... Right? It was the people from Baghdad and slaves from Syria, because this is not how Svardim tradition. Okay. I'm going to take that back. The notion that every person who's not Ashkenazi is Svardi is a point that most people that Reb Uvadia called Svardi do not agree with. Right, Chalabim have the Minhage Chalab. And the Syria, right, the Syrians, Lebanese, Egyptians, Iraqis, they are all have very proud traditions. And Reb Uvadia got in a lot of trouble in this because already when he was a young man, right, in Baghdad, he made the mistake of getting up and giving halachic shiurim in shul and saying, we have to paskin like Maran. And he literally got kicked out of the country. He had to flee Iraq. Because they said, no, Sheikh it's Kwefer. Well, they probably didn't say that. It was Svardim after, right? This was Iraq. But they said, no, we don't paskin like Maran. We paskin like
Ben Ishchai.
Ben Ishchai. We paskin like the Ben Ishchai, Rabbi Yosef mi Baghdad. Right? And therefore, this notion that there's such a thing as a pan-Svardi culture, which includes Edut HaMizrach, was something that Reb Uvadia was, in certain ways, inventing to the chagrin of Edut HaMizrach, right, of all those other traditions, and they are proud traditions. Right? They are not like, I assume most of us in this room are of Ashkenazi, some way, descent. Right? We can trace back our lineage maybe, I don't know, a few hundred years, but oh my God, right? I remember in YU, the person in charge of Svardic studies, he was, I forget which was him and which was his wife, but I think it was his wife, was 82nd generation Syria. Right? And they have the Shtari Yuchsin to prove it. Right? 82 generations. The tradition in Syria was that the shul in Syria had been built by Yoav ben Tsruya when David HaMelech sent him to conquer Syria. That's the tradition in Syria. Now, that may or may not be historically true, but it is true that there have been communities that are documented door achar door to that period, so it's not technically impossible. Right? That we can't do. So these traditions were very upset because they said, who are you to tell us that there's such a thing as a pan-Svardi culture? Now, Reb Uvadia said this because A, I assume he believed it, but B, it was important that you have strength in numbers. Right? And again, we come back to Shas. When the state first started, all major rabbis were Ashkenazi. And the Svardim were in the minority. And therefore, when the infamous Takanot Yerushalayim happened in the early years of the state, L'shem Achdus, the rabbis got together in Yerushalayim, including Rav Uziel, who was Svardic chief rabbi, and Rav Herzog, who was Ashkenazi chief rabbi, and decided that in the name of Achdus, we were going to come and discuss and come up with a unified psak on many issues. Take a guess which shita they followed on every single psak. Right? You don't have to guess, but it was the Ashkenazi tradition. Now, in order to solve that problem, Reb Uvadia, when he said, "Lahachzira Torah liyoshna," it's not just to follow the Beit Yosef. It was to give Svardim courage, pride, a backbone against the Ashkenazi rabbinic hegemony. Unifying them behind the Beit Yosef plus the political movement of Shas was a good way of doing that. If you splinter, it's much harder. So I assume he also believed this, But it also had, there was a political element to it, that if you wanted to reassert the pride of non-Ashkenazi Jewry, you had to present a unified front of non-Ashkenazi Jewry, which you then called Sephardi Jewry, as if that was one tradition. But he got a tremendous amount of pushback from within the communities of Yehudut HaMizrach. And if you look in 11, I just gave you one of his tshuva, he talks about this. He says, "Inei eskara yamim mikedem v'mei chorfil lefnei yoter merim shana." I remember 40 years ago, kasher bisarti tzedek. This is the story I told you before. Bisarti tzedek bekal rav batzad rabotai sher hushuli lahorot berabim horeti la lachal umaset shetzarich lafrish chalav bracha. Okay, whatever. Whatever psak it was about hilchot chala. Kedivrei haRambam umaran, like the Rambam and the Beit Yosef. That was what I paskined, okay? But just look at the end of that paragraph. I paskined publicly when I was 18 against the Ben Ishchai in Baghdad. Okay? Look what he says happened. There were, right?
Iraqis.
They told the Iraqi rabbis, came Tamosh at Sayir Liamim Kamoni Yarhiv Oz Lachoka Rava Ben Ishchai, and they said, "How arrogant can you be, you 18-year-old? You're going to argue on the Ben Ishchai and Rabbi Yosef in Baghdad." Ukshtanti Lifnehem Mayanu Lifdir Rambam Marana Shulchan Aruch. He said, "It's not me. It's the Rambam. It's the Shulchan Aruch." Hey Shivuli, they said to me, "V'chiyagon Rabbi Yosef Chaim Baal Ben Ishchai Liyadam Midivrehem." What you think the Ben Ishchai didn't know the Rambam? Rabbi Yosef Chaim, Hevin Shep, Adrehem, Shakadua Rama Maran, whom Mitkael, Shimiskalo, Darhem Vachetzi, Vadu, Sophie Kesav, etc., etc. Maybe he's greater, maybe he knew it was a mistake, whatever. Lachain Devre Rabin, Ishai, Kant, Muimo, Blai, said, "Nah, I don't understand him." The Yanu, Vyamru, Yehia, Echshia, Sulachlok, Rabbeinu Agaon, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Baal Ben Ishchai. They said, "No, you can't argue with the Ben Ishchai. Kimane da nachnu hulo yeda. What are you going to know? What are we going to know that you don't, that he didn't know? Lachin ein lazuz midvarav yaminu smol. You can't move. Uveemet she called the Rebbe in them shachar. It's wrong. There's no mourning to their claims. Shein zu darkashel Torah. It's wrong. It's against the Torah." ולא כתב הגאון מהרי בעל תשומת הדשן פסקיו שיכול תלמיד לחלוק על רבו שכך היא דרכה של תורה בימי התנאים, etc., etc. And in 12 he tells you that he continued this in Eretz Israel. Right, chayotze bo horeti mikvar lanshe paras umarako shalul Eretz Israel shalol yivarchu al kriyat ha-halal b'rosh chodesh. Right, the Beis Yosef against the Ramah paskins, you don't say halal with a bracha on Rosh Chodesh. You just say halal without a bracha. But the minhag in Persia and Morocco was to follow the Ramah's psak and to say a bracha. And I told them, when you move to Israel, you can't do it anymore. Even though that was their minhag. Ukvar he'id maran shulchan aruch, etc., etc. Shulchan aruch, he said this. And then he skipped down to after the ellipsis, and he says, ulafuki medivrei cholek al zeh. Against those rabbis who tell them that the Edut HaMizrach are allowed to keep their minhagim, ein dvarav nichonim klal. They're wrong. Bifrat makom isur bracha levatala v'shomea lanu yishkon vetach. Now, who were his main Edut HaMizrach cholkim? Right. So there's a few big names who were opposed to him from within the Edut HaMizrach camp. Probably the most vehement was Harav Shalom Masas, in his Tshuvot, Shemesh Umagain, Tshuvot Shemesh and others, but why Shemesh Umagain? Magain, where I'm protecting Minhagei, they do to Mizrach, Morocco specifically. Also, Mordechai Eliyahu, right? Other chief rabbi. Another chief rabbi, Mordechai Eliyahu. But this is Rabbi Ovadia's shita. Now, this position, yes, Ellie.
When you mentioned he called them Bavel, so they believe that they're descendants from the time of the Talmud.
Correct. And they are. I mean, they are. This is not like they believe. They are. They mamash are. Right? This is not like they really are. I'm saying, you know, they are all 70, 80 generations, you know, it's incredible, but they are, right? You know, I'm, you know, you ask them, I'm sure they can trace themselves back to Ravina and Ravashi. I'm saying, like, they can, right? I don't know if all of them can, but yes. Okay, fine. This, however, expresses itself not just in... So this is methodological point one. This is the biggest one, right? That A, the Beit Yosef is Mara Da'atra of Eretz Yisrael. He's the Mara Atra of Sfaradim, and therefore all Sfaradim follow his psak, especially in Israel. And this means that there's a pan-Sfaradi culture, and Eduta Mizrach have to give up their customs from the Ben Ishchai, the Chida, and all that. There are two ramifications of that, which I put next. One is that his psak is based on a belief that minhag has very little validity compared to straight up source, right, text sources. Right, that's implicit. Right, he thinks he has a text shita, namely, we follow the Beit Yosef no matter what, and I don't care if the minhag is different. Right, Eduta Mizrach, all the different Edot say, no, it's not true. We have a minhag to follow Ben Ishchai, Chida, the Ramah, whatever it might be. And Halach HaLamaisa, you look at Remor Echelio and Hilchot Nida, he paskins half the time, more than half the time, like the Ramah. The minhag of much of Eduta Mizrach is to keep all the Ramahs, Chumran, and Hilchot Nida. You read Tarda Bayit of Rav Ovadia, he chucks every Chumrah of the Ramah in the garbage. Right? He writes pages and pages to prove that it's not right. But Rav Ovadia tells you that part of his opposition to Eduta Mizrach was not just that he followed the Ben Ishchai and the Chida, was that they did this because they thought Minhag was more important than what could be proved textually, and he didn't agree. In 13, this is from a drasha of his. He says, look, Ani ohevet kol ha'edot be'ofen shaveh. I love everybody. You know it's going to be bad. That's a bad introduction. I love you all, but limashal edut shel bavlim. I love the Babylonians. I love the Iraqis. But nichshalim b'davar echad. But they make a mistake. They light, and then they make the bracha, like Ashkenazim. Right? The Beis Yosef says you make the bracha, and then you light. Ashkenazim, we know, we light, we close our eyes, and we make the bracha. And that's what they do, and the Iraqis do as well. And I said, they're wrong, the Iraqis are wrong. So everyone says, you hate Iraqis. What are you talking about? Ani Bavli, that's me. I'm from Iraq. But halacha ze halacha. Halacha ze halacha. Halacha ze lo pochedet mishum adam. And halacha isn't afraid of anybody. No custom, nobody, no Ben Ishchai, no Chida, no nobody. Right? Halacha ze halacha ze halacha. Don't tell me. I have a shita and halacha. I don't care what your minhag is. It's garbage done. Zeu. More significantly, perhaps, is that this... Perhaps the axis along which this is most expressed is the relationship to the role of Kabbalah in Psak. So, I'm not going to read all this inside, but let me outline it for you. Okay, there are several ways of approaching the role of Kabbalah in Psak. One is to say, Kabbalah has a trump card in Psak. Whatever Kabbalah says, goes. Now, there are nuances in that position, because some poskim say, some pro-Kabbalah in Psak poskim say that that's only true of Zohar, which is attributed to Rav Shimon bar Yochai and Hizatana, but not necessarily to the Arizal, because it's, you know, Rav Shlomo Luria, you know, as great as he is only a few hundred years ago. Other poskim say the exact opposite. They say, no, Rav Shimon bar Yochai was a Tana. But in general, we don't paskin like Rav Shimon bar Yochai. So if something's in the Zohar, we might reject it just like we do Rav Shimon in the Mishnah. But the Arizal saw the Gemara, and anything he said must mimela be in line with the Gemara, and therefore will only paskin like the Arizal, not necessarily the Zohar. Some will paskin like the Zohar and the Arizal. But writ large, there's a group of poskim who say Kabbalah trumps the simple interpretation of Psak, and either it overrides classic Psak, or it forces us to reinterpret Psak, or however you want to get to it. But bottom line is, however the Kabbalah paskins, we paskin. At the other extreme is the traditional, one of the more traditional Ashkenazi methodologies, which is the way the Chassam Sofer puts it. I gave it to you in 15, but I'll just tell you the punchline, which is, don't do it. Kabbalah has no authority in Pesach whatsoever. And then if you just look at that, the last line of 15, he says, Ulumat zeh ha-me'arev sifrei gayonim divrei Torah. If you mix Kabbalah and Pesach, over al choresh shor v'chamor yachdav, you are violating the isser of, right, shor v'chamor yachdav, of leading a donkey and a cow, right, an ox together. V'imu manhig Yisrael, manhig bikilayim. If you paskin and you lead the Jews, you're leading them bikilayim. Right, halacha and Kabbalah, they're both important, but never the twain shall meet. Kabbalah is Kabbalah, halacha is halacha, end of story. Right, we just don't deal with it. Right, the example of someone who says what I said originally, I gave you the Shut Masat Binyamin, but it's also Michtav L'Chizkiyo and the Beit Dino Shlomo. You just look, second line at 14. Sefer HaZohar Levado Yaleh B'Kaf Shniyah Machriyah Et Kulam, right? Go back one line. Im Yu Kol Mechabrim B'Kaf Mazayim Echad. If all poskim were on one side of the scale, V'Sefer HaZohar Levado Yaleh B'Kaf Shniyah Machriyah Et Kulam. Right, Zohar on one side, all poskim the other side, you poskim like Zohar. Right, that's about as explicit a statement you could have, that we always poskim like Kabbalah. The third position is the position of the Beit Yosef and the Mishnah Brura. Right, so it finds resonance in the Ashkenazi and Sephardi Pesach, which is when halacha is silent, Kabbalah has authority. When halacha says something, Kabbalah has no authority. Right? And I gave you in 17 that the Beit Yosef in his Hakdama, where he lists all the authorities that he quotes, he gives you everybody, right? Rashi, Tosfos, Ran, Rif, Rush, etc. And the last line he just says, "V'ktzad mikomot mamarei haZohar." Once in a while I quote the Zohar. Right? Meaning it's not my main thing, but sometimes I quote the Zohar, because if no one else says anything, I will paskin that way. So, building on our first two principles, namely, we should always follow Beit Yosef, and two, halacha is more important than minag, this expressed itself in three, because Edut HaMizrach, one of the things that typifies the classic Moroccan, Tunisian, Iraqi, Iranian posek, all the people who follow Ben Ishchai, Chida, and the like, is that Kabbalah is very significant in Pesach. And Rav Avadya does not like this at all. And I gave you in 16, you can see this, right, in the bolded parts. Kvar katav maran chida b'brikei Yosef. Sha'ash, classic example, was the brought, but we're going to see how this doesn't work. But let's start with it. Okay. Machloket about the bracha v'notin layav koach. And bracha v'notin layav koach does not appear in the Gemara. Ashkenazim say the bracha because the Gaonim claim that in their Girsaot it actually appears in the Gemara. The Edut HaMizrach say it al pi Kabbalah because the Chida said to say it. So he writes, Ukvar katav maran achida b'berkei Yosef, sh'af shekibalnu horat maran, even though we normally accept Beit Yosef, she'pasak she'en levarech, hanotein le'yakoach, who says don't say the bracha. Bracha, Kimlan, She'ilu Ra'am Maran Data Kodesh Arizal. We established that had the Beit Yosef seen the Arizal, Gam Hu Yoresh She'esh Livarcha, he would have said, "Bless the Kenit Pashet Haminhag V'Gliloteinu," and that is the Minhag. V'Uma Gam She'Knesset Hagdola Katav Shemaran Chazar Bo Mizeh B'Sof Amav. So much so the Knesset Gedol just asserts without proof that the Beit Yosef changed his mind at the end of his life. V'chein ra'ui linhog. And he writes, v'chein, right, just follow the bullets here. V'chein pasak b'ben Yishchai, she'kedivrei ha'arizal ikar. Ben Yishchai paskins that way. And then he says, in the next bolded part, v'inini la'ashiv, my response is, ki be'emet lo nechayed mimene divrei ha'arizal hanal. I know what the Arizal said, trust me, I know everything. Right, I know everything, I know the Arizal. V'kasher einei tzadik techazena misharim b'tshuvati, v'veiti gamgen divrei ha'arav, Ben Ishchai, Rav Kafachaim, Shabbat Skush, Yesh Lano, Tamid, Adamin Ba'alma. I quote him. Ulam adraba beidutcha neged milachim lo evosh. In your testimony, I will not be ashamed in front of the king. Shemacher sherov poskim arishonim svirlei desagid lono tamid ad la'al me'almaya, etc., etc. Right? I'm not going to listen to you. Not on losing lef koach, not on how you say kaddish, nothing. Lechein, skip to the next bolded. Lechein sadak ma'od marana beit Yosef. Therefore, the Beis Yosef is correct. And next line, Nish anti bazel rabotenu achronim shehaya lahem yad v'shem gam bechokhmara kabbalah. I rely on those poskim who knew kabbalah v'im kol zeh pasku shebekriyash ma v'rachotel yonah kenahug adamrin ba'alma ad yitbarach, who said that, this is in Kaddish, they only say amen ad yitbarach, you don't say the whole etc, etc, etc. He does not agree. Right, in 18 again, right, he quotes the Chida, and he argues, it's not true, it's not true, it's not true, it's not true. So, battle number 3 was the role of Kabbalah in Psak. They do the Mizrach following A, Minhag, B, their belief that the Ben Ish Chai and the Chida are final word, not the Beit Yosef, follow Kabbalah in Psak. Rabbi Avadya Yosef, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Okay. Now, I'm going to qualify what I just said, and this is Benny Lau's point. It's not true ad hasof. Very brief summary of all of Psak, okay? Very brief summary of all of Psak. That's an ambitious statement, but we'll do it anyways. All of Psak rests on the following principles. It is a balance of interpretation of canonical texts, right? Meaning, how do you read the Gemara? 2, what did previous authorities say? And 3, what's the custom? After you have that, that's the theoretical psak, then you have to apply it to the reality, so you have to assess the mitzvah, you have to assess the reality in front of you. And B, you have to determine if you don't have 100-0, right? You're not absolutely certain that the psak has to be one way. Is there a shasatchak, or are there extenuating circumstances, and can I paskin differently than I would in an ideal situation? Right, that's basically psak. Different poskim give different weight to those first 3 factors. Right, certain poskim are sugya poskim. They read the sugya, they paskin as they want. Right, Ramoshe Feinstein is often like this. Chazon Ish is like this. Litvish poskim are very much like this. Certain poskim are very, very precedent. Right? What did previous people say? Rabbi Avadya, classic. Right? Beit Yosef said it, that's it, we're done. Right? And in other places, if you don't have the Beit Yosef, let's line up the authorities. 1,000 people said this, 700 said that, we poskim like the 1,000. Again, not getting to whether that's a good way of poskiming, but that's what he does. Right? Hasidish poskim often, minug. Right? What did the Rebbe do? What did the previous Rebbe do? This is what we've done, that's it. We're right, that's the minug. But no posek, kimat, is immune to the other factors. And this is a point Benny Lau makes in this case. So, Hanosen Leyef Koach specifically, all Svardi communities, kimat, say Hanosen Leyef Koach, just like Ashkenazim do. So here, this goes against all of Rabbi Avadya's principles. It goes against the Beit Yosef. The reason Svardi poskim paskin this way is because of Kabbalah. Right. You would think, as you saw in the beginning of the Shuvah, he would come down and say, Lahalacha, do not say Anosin Leif Koach. But in the end, he gave in. And he said, you should say Anosin Leif Koach. Why? Because Benny Lau said, right, every posik breaks at some point. Right? As much as Rabbi Avadya didn't care about Minhag, and he didn't care about Kabbalah and all that, when everybody does it, you've got to bend. Now, the way he bent, though, only proves, right, this is the exception that proves the rule. Because the way he justifies it is he says, I'm not really paskening like Kabbalah. Why? Because the Ashkenazim paskening that way, not based on Kabbalah. And I'm not really going against the Beis Yosef. Why? Because the Ashkenazim quote the Gaonim, who say that the Girsa and their Gemara was to say, Hanozen Leyev Koach. So the Beis Yosef didn't have that Girsa. But if the Ashkenazim are right, then it's an open Gemara. The Beit Yosef didn't have that Girsa. But the Beis Yosef admits that he follows the Gemara, right? That's his canonical text. So maybe in this case, I'm willing to follow the Minhag, because I'm not really poskening like Kabbalah, I'm poskening based like the Gaonim. So it looks like I'm giving in to the Kabbalists, but I'm not. And I'm not really poskening against the Beit Yosef, because maybe the only reason he poskened that way is because he had a different gears in the Gemara, and maybe the Ashkenazim are right. Right, so he, right, it's the Minhag forced him to break his normal rules, always follow Beit Yosef Karo. But, you know, he broke slightly. Okay. I gave you, though, a beautiful... But despite that, right, in general, he didn't break. Right, that was the exception. But in general, he really did follow Beit Yosef for all he do to Mizrach, and he did not recognize the different Minhagim, including their love of Kabbalah. In 19, Benny Lau quotes from one of the Moroccan poskim, the opposition that he faced. And he writes this. Look at the italicized part. Sahadei bamromim ki en iti shum ratzon l'chol din modin psakav shom mofer ador Rav Avadya Yosef. He said, I promise you, I cannot stand up to Rav Avadya Yosef. Right? Everyone in the Sephardi world loved him. He was amazing. Mi ani, mani, karhiv oz l'haros el HaKodesh. Who am I to destroy the holy things? Achlomid parbi. But it's not me. Kano kineiti lichvodam shogdolei haTorah v'amorot asher iru et einei Yisrael b'tzvon Africa. But I fought for the glory of those poskim in North Africa. L'malam e'elef shanim b'li avsaka. 1,000 years we've been poskim this way. Who are you to tell me that I'm supposed to follow Beit Yosef? We've been, as I said, the Yehudim Mizrach, we've been there before the Beit Yosef was born, before his grandfather was born, before the Rambam was born. Right? We were in North Africa before there was a Rambam, before there was a Rif. And who are you? Right? Who are you? Hapsakim amikubalim al idura mizrach in kulam nechonim al chlo pachod mehem gam alacham kubelat yotzeitz from Africa. All they do to Mizrach, they're right, and us too in North Africa. Elu veelu divrei elukim chayim. V'kol echad chayav litzod b'drachav b'drachei avotav. Right. So he writes. Right. No one can really challenge Rav Avadya, but there really was pushback on this. So, to summarize what we've seen so far, Rav Avadya's methodology, Lachzir HaTorah LeYoshna, asserted, A, there's such a thing as pan-Sephardi culture, which the Yehudim Mizrach challenged. B, that pan-Sephardi culture must pasken LeBeit Yosef, which again, the Yehudim Mizrach challenged. They follow the Chidah, the Ben Ishchai, whatever, whoever they follow in North Africa, I have no idea. Three, he follows the more Ashkenazi / Beit Yosef position to not allow Kabbalah into Psak, at least if it's against Psak. Which is again against most of Eidut Mizrach, which follows Kabbalah over classic halach literature. And for them, and therefore he also discounts Minhag, as you see here, the Minhag of the Eidut Mizrach, against what he sees as a hardcore halachic tradition, all in favor of creating a pan-Sephardi halachic tradition. Again, did he mean this only for Sephardim or also Ashkenazim? We talked about why was he so obsessed with this. So some think this was a Zionist-like messianic vision, right, of like a Bezdin Hagadol type thing. Others think this was just a way of regaining Sephardi pride. Whatever exactly it was, this is Rav Avadya. Okay. The rest of it, it looks long, but it really isn't, because I'm not going to read it all inside. Besides for his all the different elements of the Hachzir HaTorah LeYoshna, the other thing that he's really known for, is the notion that we really, really should be makil if we can. Right? We should be makil if we can. Koach de'eter adif. Perhaps this is best summarized in 20, a quote that he likes quoting from the Chidah. Hasfaradim achuzim b'midar ha-chesed v'alachein ha-mikilim b'alacha. Svaradim, whatever this means, hold on to God's, you know, the sphera of chesed, of kindness, and that's why they're lenient. V'ashkenazim achuzim b'midar ha-gvura. And Ashkenazim hold on to God's justice. V'fich v'alachein machmirim b'dinim. And therefore they're always machmir. But this is his method, this is his theory of life. Ashkenazim or machmir. Now how did he get there? So, perhaps the most controversial method he used is Svek Sveka. Right? Rabbi Avadia had this shita. Right? There is this notion in halacha of a double suffix, right? Of a double doubt. However, the Ashkenazi tradition, especially based on the Shach, is that this is a very limited principle. Rabbi Avadia thought there were no limits to this principle. Every time he could find for you two shitot that would line up, that would generate a lenient answer, if he felt leniency was needed for any reason, he would generate it. Right? And he would use his encyclopedic knowledge of Torah to find all those shitot, all those positions, and create double and triple and quadruple and quintuple doubts to generate kula. And this is what he thought. And I gave you in 21, he would yell at people and he would say, what are you doing? This is the derech of Torah, to be makil. Because, and he would quote all types of different principles. Such as Hatorah Chasal Mamon Shel Yisrael, God cares about Jewish people's money. Every time you're machmir and you cost the Jews money, that's a terrible thing. And he would use his tremendous knowledge of Torah to generate these double and triple doubts, to generate kula when at all possible. Now, he would not usually do this against the Beit Yosef, which is coming back to his earlier principle, but sometimes he even goes against the Beit Yosef using Svek Sveika. Very rarely, he does do it. I don't know, very rarely. Rarely. Now, there are variations on this. Besides for his obsession with Kula and Svek Sveika to generate it, there are other things. So, for example, I gave you here in 22, one of the things he would do is he would often encourage halamat ayin, right? Just closing your eyes to something. So, for example, the psak I put here is: can you give a hechsher to a hotel that would otherwise be not kosher if you know the food will all be kosher, but they will serve ice cream after meat to those who want it? So the Tzitzit Eliezer said, absolutely not. Because you can't, that's the equivalent of giving a hashkacha to eating milk after meat. Rabbi Avadia said you can. Because he said, look, what's the alternative? They'll go not kosher. And then what'll happen? There's all these chilonim who don't really care about kashrus. They'll go to the hotel because it's on the beach. If it's kosher, memela, they'll eat kosher. And what's the worst that'll happen? So they'll have ice cream after their meat and they'll violate some minhag? Okay, fine. But if you don't give it, right, you don't give a hashkacha, it'll go not kosher, and the people who don't care anyways will eat treif. And you find in Ipsak not just a reliance on kula, but a tendency towards sometimes just saying, look, even if there's something wrong going on, the best thing we can do is, right, is close our eyes to it. Which also leads to what I gave you in the first principle, what he calls midyunut harabim miyuto. Right, he often, right, sometimes he's straight out makil, but even when he's not makil, like in this case, he's not allowing them to eat milk after meat, he very much looks for psakim that will allow you to have the least possible evil instead of the majority of evil. I gave you that full tshuva, or a good part of that tshuva in 24, but I'm not going to read it now. The last thing to know about Rabbi Avadia, and we've already sort of touched on it, is that his method assumes that the primary tools you need as a posek are not sharp analytical abilities, right, to make a sharp diuk in a Rambam and Paskin like it, but is what he calls Sinai, right, based on the Gemara's distinction between Sinai and Oker Harim, is to know everything, right? He thought that all of Psak came down to knowing all Shitot and being able to use them. And that's how we generated these Svek Sveikot. And that's what I gave you in 23. That's his Agdam Rebim Omer, that he said the reason he paskins the way he does is because, unlike the Ashkenazim who think that Oker Harim is more important, right? And he quotes Rav Shlomo Kluger, who says that nowadays Oker Harim is more important. It's more important to be sharp because you can just look things up in a book. He says, no. Even nowadays, the most important thing is knowledge, is knowing all the Shitot. Svarot are pipule srak. They're just intellectual gymnastics. That's not what's important. And I gave you his very intense piece in 23. To summarize the second half of him, again, besides for all the Svarti, unity, anti-Kabbalah, minhag, shitot, his other commitment was to leniency, which expresses itself in his use of Svek Sveika. Even when he can't generate an actual kula, finding ways of at least poskening ways that minimize damage, that encourage closing your eyes to things if making a protest would make things worse. And the last thing is that he felt that in order to be a good posek, it's not as important to have sharp analysis. and come up with all types of chidushim. As I said before, he's a precedent posek. He cares what people said in the past, but specifically for him, that means Sinai Adif, is to know as much as you possibly can and to invoke as much of precedent as possible. And that's what he uses in his psak. And as I said with the six feka, that's what allowed him to generate many of his kulot against people who might tear down the svarot. Based on their sharp intellect, he would say, look, that's very nice, but I have a million poskim behind me, and it's much more important to have a million poskim behind you, to be a precedent posek, to be a living, breathing encyclopedia, than it is to have a few chidushim in the line of Gemara. That's not a upaskin. You paskin by marshaling as much information as you possibly can. That gives you at least a snapshot of who Rav Avadya was as a posek. Again, if you want to read more about it, I thoroughly, thoroughly love this book and really encourage it. Next week, I forget who Rav Tertiner is doing, but he's doing somebody. Okay, Marev.